as I built up that residual and the fundamentals of the company, first it was me as an independent sales rep, and then I eventually started the company. Those chunks of cash from the real estate properties allowed me to live and move. And it's like my little real estate loan and education and what not to do in real estate.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons. Hey, I'm here with Brad Wymer. I'm going to tell you about him because this is going to be a fun one. He's a venturer. He's an investor. He's a serial entrepreneur. He founded Easy Pay Direct back in 2012. It's an online payment gateway servicing e-commerce businesses that sell between $1 million and $100 million online. They've worked with over 30,000 merchants at this point. He hosts a podcast too. It's a fun one. It's Beyond a Million Podcast, where he interviews world-class experts in sales, marketing, operations, hiring, technology, and wealth building to uncover the tactics and strategies that they're working on today. He gets to learn exactly how companies have scaled past a million. So beyond a million. He's constantly pushing himself physically and mentally, certainly. He's ridden a bicycle from LA to Boston. It's 3,400 plus miles. He's climbed twice the height of Mount Everest in 36 hours. That's 58,058 feet. And he's run from one side of the Grand Canyon back to the other with a broken foot, 45 plus miles in 12 hours. So it's some pretty exciting stuff. He's out of Austin, Texas. He's got a killer dog named The Professor. And so I'm excited to have him here. Brad, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you having me.
Dude, that's a pretty exciting intro. I mean, just what you have been through, but what you push yourself through on an ongoing basis is pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's an interesting part of life. I was asked years ago why I did crazy shit. Can I say shit?
Sure.
Why I did crazy shit. And I had to reflect on that because it's a good question. But ultimately, I think beyond it being a good opportunity to push yourself mentally and obviously physically, you connect with people through those experiences, both during and afterwards. It's a very cool part of my life for me.
Well, all right. So let's talk about the crazy stuff. So how much of it is actually physical? How much of it is actually mental?
When we talk about, I think, any endurance stuff, and I look at endurance as things that last more than 5 hours. Well, I'll tell you both. Like if you go run a marathon, you've got two components. You've got training for it physically, and then you've got the mental side of it. And I am a really firm believer that it is 90% mental, if not more. I think that literally anybody could get off the couch that doesn't have some massive ailment and make a marathon happen. Now, it might take them longer than it would if they trained, but even if they haven't trained, they can probably go do it. And once you pass 5 hours, in addition to the mental and physical, you have nutrition. And nutrition becomes a really, really significant component because the mindset will take you so far, but at some point, your body, the food becomes a real thing. Either you have the fuel or you don't.
What percentage of your success would you attribute to your mental component? Your ability to get through all of this and push yourself mentally?
You mean success in business or in other areas of life?
Yes, in business.
Oh man, a lot of it. I mean, I don't think that you have to do this crazy shit to get there, but I think ultimately the Henry Ford quote of whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot to that. It starts with your mindset. It starts with where you are. And I think it's really hard to grip that when you're younger. And when you're not successful, it's hard to be like, oh yeah, I'll just think my way into it. But ultimately the habits that you create are based on what you believe. And those are the things that create the life in your future, right? Like what you're doing every single day is what adds up to tomorrow. And that starts with what you think about.
Correct. And then heavily what you think about. So talk to me about, take it one step further. So it's heavily what you think about. What are you letting into your life that is impacting what it is that you think about?
I think the way that I look at it is, what am I not letting in? And what I'm not letting in is I'm trying to limit the bullshit. I don't want to listen to the COVID conversation got exhausting really quickly.
Yes.
And I got about 6 weeks into that experiment and said, okay, I've formulated my opinion. And I'll continue to look at data as data comes through. And there's no reason to rehash this shit every single day. I'll make a choice and I'll live my life accordingly. Politics, negative people, I don't really watch the news. If something is a big deal, it surfaces. You hear about it.
Right.
I love playing sports, I don't follow any sports because it doesn't serve me in the rest of my life. It occupies a lot of time and mind space and doesn't serve me. So I just try to information diet is the way that I look at it.
Yeah. Heavier on the defense than the offensive side.
I think that just being protective of your space and your time allows you to be proactive in the areas and go on offense in the areas that you want to. And if you don't protect your space, you have a very hard time going on offense in the areas you want to. You end up having to be defensive to the things that just come in.
Seems to me like you've given a lot of thought to where it is that you, who you are and where you're at today and where it is that you want to go. Have you always been like that?
I don't know if always, but I found sales when I was 18. And I think that was the beginning of it. I probably had some reflection before that, but when commission only sales happened, it was this very direct correlation between my behavior and the outcome.
Yeah.
Right. If I didn't do the actions, I did not get the outcome.
Right.
And when I realized that, I thought, shit, I need to get control of how I can do the outcome or do the actions the best way possible. And that led me to, why am I thinking what I'm thinking? Why are my behaviors as they are?
Mm-hmm.
Let me work on myself and my mindset to get there. And that's been evolution over time, you know, and it will continue to be.
Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place, batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batchleads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batchleads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month. Your entry point to sales was selling what?
Cutco knives.
Cutco. I love it.
Yes, sir.
So good. They really have the best knives, do they not?
They have amazing knives that are guaranteed forever, all made in the US.
No, it's quality stuff. My cousin sold a whole bunch and I absolutely possess a Cutco knife in my drawer.
Yep. No, it's awesome stuff. And I think equally important for me is Vector Marketing is the training arm for them, always has been.
Yeah.
And they just have a phenomenal training program, ecosystem, ethos. I know a lot of people that have done very, very well with Cutco as the foundation, but I'm tremendously grateful and forever will be for that experience.
Yeah. Tell me about Easy Pay Direct. I want to talk about that. And then I want to talk about real estate.
Sure. Yeah. So Easy Pay Direct at the core helps companies accept credit cards predominantly online or at live events or the like. So we have a heavy concentration in software as a service companies, kind of e-commerce widgets. So people just selling stuff online and also information products. So Tony Robbins, Grant Cardone, Dean Graziosi, Frank Kern, Fortune Builders, a bunch of the big name real estate info product people are all clients of ours.
How about this? But Brad, why don't I just use Stripe? I can just go to Stripe and I'm going to be up in a day or 2 days. And it's so easy. Why don't I just use them?
I love it. Yeah. Well, the first answer to that is all of the people that I just listed used Stripe at some point and are now using us.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll tell you something. And a secondary to that is if you Google Stripe held my money, you will get tens of millions of hits on this. Really, really common problem for people that are producing volume, usually anything over, call it $300,000-$500,000 a year, end up more likely to run into problems with a Stripe or a PayPal, something like that. And at the core, the reason for that is not that they're bad companies. They're like phenomenal, awesome companies. They are just better served. They better serve smaller businesses than larger ones. So once you've passed that $500,000 mark in sales, you have a much higher likelihood of running into a problem with having them hold money or close your account. So at the core, they are what we call payment facilitators or payment aggregators, and they work fundamentally differently than a traditional merchant account provider. So you and I as consumers, the cool thing about using credit cards, Neil, is that if we buy something, anything that we buy for the next 6 months, we have the opportunity or ability to dispute the charge. If we feel like we didn't get the product we wanted, it wasn't exactly as we liked it, whatever, whatever, we can dispute it. And the first thing that happens when we dispute a charge is the money gets pulled out of the business owner's bank account. And then the business owner has to fight to say, no, I delivered the product. And they may win the charge back, they may lose it. But the first thing that happens is the money gets pulled out of their account.
Right.
Now, here's the problem. If the business owner isn't there, meaning we as consumers dispute a charge, the business has closed its doors, then the credit card processor has to pay that money back. And the bigger the business is, and the more likely they are to have a chargeback or a dispute, and it doesn't have to be their business, but their industry in general,
right,
the higher risk it poses for the credit card processing company. So as businesses grow, this becomes a more and more real risk for them that their payment provider is going to close their account or hold money. Now, Stripe and PayPal, anybody can use them. And what you said is, hey, I can just get up and running quickly with Stripe.
Sure.
That's great. The reason you can get up and running quickly is because they didn't do any underwriting.
Right.
So they don't know who you are, what you do, how you operate, what you sell it, how you deliver it, if you deliver it. And as a result, the only mechanism they have to control risk is to close your account or hold your money. Again, it's not good or bad. It's just how that business model works,
right?
So the alternate approach is, and by the way, tons of traditional payment providers work that way also because it reduces friction to get you up and running.
Sure.
It's just my perspective as a business owner is that that's not ideal if you're doing $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, $10 million, $100 million a year and you suddenly lose the ability to accept payments.
Right.
So the alternate approach is to underwrite the companies, get to know who you are, what you do, how you operate, what you sell, and get comfortable with it before we approve the account. And if you do that effectively, the likelihood of having to close the account later goes way, 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 way down. So at the core, that's the first step of Easy Pay Direct. And the second is that we built software that allows you to have more than one merchant account in it and then automatically split the volume across them. That way, if you ever do have a problem with one of the accounts, the other ones are still up and running. So we built software that basically just helps you navigate that ecosystem, that environment of running a business online or accepting payments once you're beyond a million in a much safer, easier fashion. And we just take care of the whole thing for you.
You know, one of the things I often talk about is the risk, is risk in business, risk in assets, everything associated with it, because I think risk often gets overlooked or diminished as we're so focused on what's our return, what's the upside look like. And it seems to me like if somebody's going to go in, get in business, and if you can get on today and start accepting payments, that while that may be great, there's a risk component to that in your business that probably just got overlooked or not thought about. Until sometimes, and probably the reason why, if you Google it, it shows up in huge numbers, probably why people just didn't think about the risk until it's too late. And then there's a problem.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's like, functionally, it works like insurance here, right?
Yeah.
When do you need insurance? Well, like only when there's a problem.
Only when there's a problem.
Only when there's a problem.
And that's really good when you're going to find out, did the company you placed your faith in and your money in, or they could deliver on their promise.
Yeah, exactly right. And so the language that I tend to use is, look, we're really good at playing Superman. It's a lot easier if we don't have to. The number of calls that we get when people are in peril, when an account has been shut down and all of a sudden they have no way to accept payments, it's crazy. I mean, we get them every day, all day. So most of our marketing is trying to educate people about it ahead of time before it's an issue so that we can get them set up the right way to minimize that negative if it ever comes up.
Well, there's certainly a reason why some of the industries and the country's biggest names trust you, because you obviously deliver on your promise.
Yeah. Well, also, if you've been around for 10 years, there's enough opportunity for people to put out bad press about you if you're not doing a good job.
Yes, correct. You're exactly right about that. You've stood the test of time. Tell me about real estate. What was your first entry point into real estate?
My first entry point into real estate, honestly, was probably buying a Carlton Sheets VHS course and then not watching it. That was probably my entry point. It was probably the first course I ever got. It probably sat on my table for a year. And then through that process, I ended up buying some rental properties with a friend in Indianapolis. Bought some rental properties in 2006, 2007, which, as you know, was an amazing time to invest in real estate. We bought a bunch of properties, a handful of properties at auction, and then rehabbed them, got them pretty so we can rent them, then mortgaged out of them. So pulled all the cash out of them. Mm. And really at the time, you know, we were getting like 95% loans. So there was no equity left in them. This is top of the market. And then the market crashed.
Right.
So promptly these things were heavily upside down. I pulled all the money out. They were barely cash flowing, if they were. Then I just ended up with this bloodbath for the next probably 8 years where I was running negative on them. They were occupied probably 85% of the time. I had a hand five of them. I think I had five and one of them was a fourplex. Mm-hmm. And I was probably losing 30, 35 grand a year on them for 8 years.
Most people would just, not most, but a percentage of people would just go forget that and take the property back. What had you even keep on?
Other assets. So yeah. I would have foreclosed on those if I could have. But, and you know, there's a possibility that I could have let the payments go and played a game with the bank. But having other assets and having personal guarantees on those properties, the banks absolutely could come up after the other stuff. So I didn't have the luxury of letting them go.
Were they commercial loans or were your Fannie Freddie type loans?
Fannie Freddie type loans. And ultimately what I did, there's a good lesson out of this, but what I did was in 2015, 2016, so 8, 9 years later, I took out a loan from a local bank. At this point, Easy Pay Direct was doing fairly well and took out a loan from a local bank, paid off the properties. I wrote a $250,000 check to take it to the closing table to sell the properties to somebody else, which is brutal. And then over the course of the next year, I paid back the $250 to the bank. But the way that I look at this is that it was like the loan to start Easy Pay Direct. And I think it's the only way I can look at it, really. But, you know, payments is a slow build because you're getting paid pennies on every transaction. And as I built up that residual and the fundamentals of the company, first it was me as an independent sales rep, and then I eventually started the company. Those chunks of cash from the real estate properties allowed me to live and move. And so, yeah, it's like my little real estate loan and education and what not to do in real estate.
Yeah. You get to mid-15 and the exit. Were you in any other properties at that point in time or not?
No. And those were all Midwest. And I was happy to not be in the Midwest anymore with properties either.
Yeah, I understand. And so, all right, so you're out of there. And then did you end up going back into real estate? Is there another entry point or not?
Yeah. I mean, moving to Austin. So I moved the company to Austin in the end of 14, beginning of 15. I moved here, started investing in Austin at that point, mostly single family stuff. The beginning of that was buying a condo. I was looking for an office building and I was too picky in my criteria, particularly in a fast-paced accelerating economy. I should have just loosened up the criteria because with how quickly we're moving here, and I think a lot of places in the country at the moment, but how quickly Austin has built, I would have been totally amazing to buy outside of the little bubble. My goal was to buy things within the core of downtown.
Sure.
And it's just hard to find the criteria.
Right.
And I spent years doing it. I would have been far better suited to just buy something a mile out because now things that are 2 miles out are still part of the kind of center of downtown. But yeah, I bought some condos and a commercial building ultimately. And now I'm getting into some other commercial stuff, some other single family homes, some multifamily properties.
So you bought condos, single families. Did you retain them as rentals?
So I did something a little bit different with my single family condos. I looked for buildings that were likely to get taken out by a developer. Mm. And in Austin, with how fast the city's growing,
right.
My hypothesis was, and you can label this speculation, but I think that speculation is often a term for ignorance. And the more you know about a topic, speculation goes into expertise at some point. So my hypothesis was that basically any building that was 3 or 4 stories in the core of downtown was going to get leveled by a developer and bought out for a high rise. And for the logic there is that the developers are buying the air. And so they can significantly overpay on the land value, quote, correct, overpay,
right,
because they're going up so high.
Right.
So the first condo I bought, sure enough, got taken out by a developer 2 years later. And then I bought an office building that was on a block with a condo association. And there was some discussion of the developer taking that out. This was in August of 19. And then we had a little health crisis,
yep,
in the country that some people might be aware of. And so discussions from developers buying things out and creating a high rise specifically, right, for commercial was no longer on the radar. I'm huge. You mentioned risk earlier.
Yeah.
And the way that I approach pretty much all risk, but real estate investing credit card processing adventure is to look at the absolute worst case scenario and then recognize that neither of those are likely to happen and take the frame in by 10, 20%. Mm. Look at the likely worst case and the likely best case and plan for those. I want to consider the fringe cases, but I want to plan for the likely worst, likely best. And my likely worst, when I bought the building, thinking, hey, a developer might buy this out soon, was, okay, let's say the economy shifts. Now, I did not consider a global pandemic where people would be freaking out.
As to why it would shift, correct.
Right. But I did think about it shifting. We were at a point then, and still are now, where we've been in an up market for a very long time.
Correct.
So the question on the looming recession is a relevant one. But I planned that out and said, I'm happy to have the office building here for the next 8 years until it cycles through, and that's fine too. So COVID happened, discussions started again, and when discussions started again, I got more aggressive and I bought several other units on the block. Mm. And in the end of 21, a developer came in and bought the entire block. So inside of between really the beginning of 2020, but end of 19 to end of 21, in 2 years, those things, many multiples on the money that went into it.
Incredible.
Yeah, super cool. And I think it's keeping an eye out for unique opportunities, getting to know them and knowing what you're looking for.
Unique is a very appropriate word, because I don't know if many investors out there who play this game. I hear about it on the land side, where they'll make a land grab and wait for a developer to come in. But it's interesting because you've got the ability to take things down and cash flow in a multitude of ways, right? Through short-term rentals, through straight rentals, through office rentals, whatever it may be, and then wait for the payday.
You got it. And I think that the question in those environments is, it's this risk-reward analysis of how much can you pay in those moments and how confident are you in the outcome? And in this case, I was pretty confident in the outcome. And so I, quote unquote, overpaid for several of these properties. But in a hot market, that term overpaid is, you got to be careful when you think you're being accurate with that. I mean, it's a little bit of a joke when the market's going at the cliff that it's going at right now. And of course, also have to be careful of how close you are to the cliff, right?
Correct. Yeah, you're exactly right about that.
I'll tell you when it is common outside of land is large-scale developers very commonly buy properties to aggregate a block.
Correct.
Right? So they'll look at rolling these things up and slowly buy them so that they can develop. And so if you can wedge yourself in there and say, well, I know somebody's going to buy this block, it's not a bad proposition.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right about that. What do you wish you knew now, knowing that? What do you wish you would have done differently going back to 20-year-old you?
I mean, the one thing that I can say without question is I wish I would have fucking listened to other people, you know, like would have recognized that. And here's the big thing. I've had this pattern in my life that is, as soon as I see sort of a chink in somebody's armor, an area where they're not totally aligned or where they're not totally brilliant or where they're not the best, I have a habit of being dismissive. And I think that the lesson that I would have liked my 20-year-old self to know is that people can be brilliant in one area and absolutely ridiculously stupid in another.
Yeah.
And it serves you to acknowledge their expertise in one space, even if they're an idiot in all others, and learn from it.
I've got a question for you. Are you enjoying the podcast? I sure hope you are. And if you are, may I ask you a personal favor? Would you mind going to iTunes and leaving a written review and a 5-star review? If you do that, send me a screenshot to my office. I want to send you back a list as a thank you. It's a list of the top 20 best lists to market to in order to find motivated sellers. This list has been curated by my office over years of direct marketing to sellers. This will either shortcut your path to finding the best list to start marketing to, or it's sure to add to what's already working. You can send that screenshot of your review to marketing@realgritpodcast.com. That's marketing@realgritpodcast.com. Put them in a box, right? Or put them in boxes. Take like a buffet. Take what you need to take and leave the rest.
Yeah, I still have a hard time doing that with people because I'm like, okay, so what do you leave? What do you take and what do you leave?
Right.
But I do, you got to look for the experts that are good and actually listen to them and actually listen to what they do and just follow it sometimes.
Yeah. And then what I heard you say there, you got to be mindful of who you are and probably at some point be critical of yourself in the sense that you can't just take what you want to take. It's self-serving. You need to take some things that are not totally aligned with what you believe and challenge your thoughts and your actions.
Yep. I think that's exactly it. Because if they were aligned with what you already believe, then you wouldn't need to listen to them in the first place.
Correct.
There's something that they're doing that they believe that is different than you.
Yep.
You got to experiment with that.
What's one habit you cannot live without?
Well, I'd like to believe that there's nothing that I cannot live without. I think a fundamental, I'm going to give you the terrible answer, but yeah. The fundamental answer is I really want to live from a place of no matter what happens, I'm going to modify, adjust, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But that said, I am horribly addicted to coffee, and that's a habit that I'm probably not going to live without.
Every hour of the day?
No. I'm a morning coffee person. Right. It's got to get cut off at some point.
Yeah. It fits into the bucket. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you another one is exercise.
Yeah.
So, and I think both of them actually have the same through line, which is I'm always frequently seeking the thing that's going to allow me to change my state quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And exercise is one of them. Coffee is another one. Alcohol is one. Food is one.
Music?
Like it really, music definitely can be one too, for sure. Yeah. I love that. That's a great one.
Right. That's terrific. Well, let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
Your favorite quote, if you're not failing, you're not pushing your limits. And if you're not pushing limits to a higher level, you're not maximizing your potential. Ray Dalio said it. What about that resonates with you?
I don't know. I have a different quote I like better.
Lay it on me.
Which is, I'd rather die of thirst than drink from the cup of mediocrity. And I think that, and I actually don't know who to attribute that to, but I read it on a sign in a bar in Windsor, Canada when I was 19, because you're allowed to be in bars when you're 19 in Canada, and at least in Windsor. And I just feel like if you're going to do something, you should fucking do it, and you should be good at doing it. And if you're going to be a janitor, you should be the best fucking janitor you can be.
Yeah.
Why do anything at all if you're not going to put yourself into it?
Yeah. The world would be a very different place if that was the attitude held by everyone doing anything.
Yeah, agreed.
What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
You know, I think that happens at different scales. I think when you're brand new, what holds you back is access and probably knowledge. And I think as you start to get money and start to get more experience, clarity of direction is what holds you back. Having sort of a systematic approach to what you're doing, why you're doing it, where you're going. And I'll let you know once I pass that part.
Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
Well, I think fundamentally it's growth. It's getting better at things. But right now it's building Easy Pay Direct. It's fucking fun. I'm having a good time with it. We're accelerating at a good clip. And it's all the same thing, right? It's learning to get better at appreciating the journey and all the problems. Somebody said to me the other day, the problem with people setting goals is that a lot of them signed up for the goal, but not all the obstacles that were a part of the path to get to the goal. And they don't realize that all the shit is going to be there with it.
Correct.
And that's growth, right? I think if you can have the self-awareness to realize that stuff's going to be there and lean into it and actually learn how to enjoy it, that's I know it's tough, but I think that's the game of life.
Yeah, I think that's where all the joy actually, when you can do it at a high level, when you become a master of it, that's the joy, is the stuff, is making the sausage.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I got challenged yesterday. I've got a business coach and I'm looking at building this 7,000 square foot house. And he was like, well, you could just go buy one. And we're talking numbers. And I was like, yeah, I could. And he said, why do you want to build it? It's going to take you 2 years. It's going to be horribly distracting. You could just put money into one that already exists and make it yours. What I came to was, I want the process of doing it.
Yeah.
I want the journey of this creation of being able to develop and build something and to go through that. And I think that applies to everything here.
Well, all of us are entrepreneurs can relate exactly to that. We've got to be part of the creation.
Yeah.
What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
This is going to be probably, I don't know, it might be unpopular, might not be, but it's honestly, it's money and connections. Look, I think that I feel good when I go and I'm passionate about helping underprivileged kids avoid obstacles or work through obstacles when they're younger, because I grew up in a upper middle class family. I fucked up a lot And my privilege allowed me to get out of legal situations that would currently completely derail somebody's life if they didn't have the ability to do that. And so I really like doing what I can to relate to teenagers or younger that are one arrest away from just a horrible downward spiral and getting stuck in a shitty system. But as much as I like being around those people and personally being able to influence one-on-one, and as much as that makes me feel good, the way that I can make the biggest impact is by continuing to do what I do and make money and contribute to those communities, the organizations that help do that at a better scale, and connect them with people, right? And that's the lever that I have today.
Yeah, that's great. Before we part, tell me just a little about your podcast, and maybe from starting it to where you are now, what's been your biggest takeaways?
Oh, I love it. So Beyond a Million is specifically for businesses that are already past the $1 million mark. And it's the sales, marketing, operations, technology, and taxation strategies and tactics that people use to grow once they're beyond a million. Honestly, at the core, it's my opportunity to dig into those topics and learn from people that are good at what they're doing. And I think one of the things that's cool about it and unique is that at EasyPayDirect, we get to see all the financial data. So very private thing. Obviously, we're not allowed to share any of that with anybody, but it does mean that I get to actually see who's walking the walk, talking the talk, and get access to some of those people. So the worst thing I think in life, we have a saying inside the company, which is bad data is worse than no data. Mm. And one of the worst things in life is to get advice from somebody that you think is doing well and successful and then realize later that they don't have any idea what the fuck they're talking about.
Right.
Yeah. So Beyond a Million has given me an opportunity to talk to some killer, killer, killer people that are executing at a high level.
Yeah. Incredible. Hey, for folks who want to connect with you, connect with the company, what can they do? Where can they find you?
Yeah. I mean, easypaydirect.com. If you have a business and need to accept payments and want help with that, you can check out bradweimert.com or Brad Weimert on all the socials. It's W-E-I-M-E-R-T. I'm fairly loud and active on Instagram, and I have a mohawk. I'm hard to miss.
Hard to miss. No doubt about that. We'll make sure the links are in the show notes below. I appreciate you taking the time to connect up here. It's a fun story about what you do. You know, you've got a business, but then you got another real estate piece, which has been very successful for you, and a unique way of putting that in place, because not a lot of people are executing their real estate portfolio like you are. So it's really cool to hear about that and just a totally different take on it.
Yeah, Neil, I appreciate it, man. That's fun hanging out.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks so much. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time.
If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.